Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/filmsack and use the promo code FILMSACK at checkout.
Listen, here's the thing. If you can't spot the sucker in your first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker.
Maybe you'd like to join in. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 358 for November 18th, 2017. We are mining the very best film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. He always listens to his Oreos before bedding Dunaway.
Oreo. Oh, hi. Listen, here's the thing. If you can't spot the sucker in your first half hour of this movie, well, then you are the sucker. Hey, guys around here will tell you, you sack for a living, but it's like any other content creation endeavor. You can't sack for a living. You grind it out like toothpaste after your significant other squeezes from the top of the tube. Why? Also, here are some things I've heard from my day-to-day life as a podcaster. If it don't hurt, slam it in the car door. Mike, whoa, the Italian Ice Rodriguez. And sucking on a fountain straw like that will get you face punched, dude. Drunk guy on Fifth. And finally, winner's floss, Tommy the Tooth. God, how boring is something when you have to have nothing better to do than sit around quoting assholes and making up names for shit. Don't splash the pot.
Wow. I think we already get a taste of what Dunaway might think of Rounders.
Yeah.
Also with us, Randy, I'd like to invite hookers over when I'm in a red long underwear piece and a bowler hat, Jordan.
Ah, aloha, Scott, Brian.
Hi.
Randy. Ever tell you boys about the time I ran a gambling establishment down in San Antonio?
Nope.
True story. Easy pickings for me, buddy WTR. You can make a lot of money cleaning out suckers from all over. You just got to follow my three rules. Number one. We don't call it Texas Hold'em in Texas. Actually, we don't call it anything. Anyway, number two, always commit to your funny accent. Never, ever let it slip up. If you've got an Oklahoma accent or an Arkansas accent, you keep at it at all times. Except for me, I don't have an accent. Number three, the key to never being caught by your tail is to not have one tail or two tails. You want to have bushels and bushels of tails. Look around a gambling room in Texas, and it looks like a performance of the Nutcracker put on by a bunch of coked up cats in chairs.
Oh my God. Southern accent, and did I ever tell you about the time I ... Yep. If we get one like old movie reference, I think Scott's going to have, he's going to open his mouth and a bunch of bees are going to fly out.
Yeah. Yeah, like Tony Todd. That's how that would go. With us finally, Brian, this movie is boring Ibbot.
Wow. Whoa. Okay, Brian.
Good luck.
Listen, you son of bitch. I don't know what this filming sack is, but you're going to have to step up your game if you're wanting to sack me. I make many, many shit movies. You ever sack Jennifer Wright, you son of bitch? No. I make Aragorn. You sack that one? No. I make Mean and Iron Mist with Leonardo DiCaprio, and you don't sack that either. Oh, sure, you sack Con Air, but every freaking alligator blood podcaster sack Con Air. When you son of bitch going to sack Transformer Dark of Moon? Give me Oreo. Wow. I'm hungry.
Is he in Dark of the Moon? Mm-hmm. Oh
yes, yep, along with John Turturro.
I didn't know. Yeah. Really? I knew Turturro was in there.
He was also in Aragorn, which is on our must see list if it ever comes up.
Wait, was Aragorn? I thought that was Jeremy Irons. Am I thinking of the? Was he in that too?
Oh, he is.
All right. Well, there you go. Listen, here's both the of them. Here's both the of thing them. With Malkovich. One of the great actors, man. The guy's amazing, versatile, weird, whatever. I don't know about this accent, though. Like, it's effective.
I know.
Like, it's effective at me going, he's foreign, but I don't... I just feel like if I was Russian,
it's not quite...
Right.
Yeah.
Where's our go-to Russian guy? I mean, why didn't we have Armageddon Russian in there? I mean, where was he at? I mean, yeah. Was he busy that year?
He wasn't actually Russian. We apparently have no real Russian actors in North America.
Yeah, that's true. We don't have... Well, okay, there's that
except
dude...
Except for Trump!
The guy...
Jeremy Irons and John Malkovich, both in Aragorn with Djimon Hounsou.
Oh, okay. I knew Irons... That's a bad movie, by the way. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. I've been waiting for us to sack it so I can finally see it.
It's not good. The book was very popular, and that movie's terrible. But anyway, the deal with him, with Malkovich, is I find him compelling, and my favorite scenes in this movie were where he was in them. So it's not a problem. It's just that I hear that accent and go, y'all are faking this one. This isn't real.
Accent? I don't know, man. I don't even know if I would classify it as an accent. It's more like, I don't even know how to describe it.
Yeah
it's... Part of it is an accent. I think it's very root is accent.
It's,
but it,
I
but
don't
it
know.
Into, it's not even Boris Badenoff.
No, like, no. So, it kind of reminds me of mumble rap, which is not really an accent as much as it's just an attitude.
Mm, right. That's right. True.
To my ears, John Malkovich doesn't sound much different in this movie than Brian Ibbett just sounded in his greeting.
Yeah, no, you kind of nailed it, actually, by the way. Like you,
and they called it on Twitter.
Nailed the Russian accent, the John Malkovich Russian accent.
The John Malkovich Russian accent or Russian accent. Like everybody, there was a lot of Twitter fervor going. Oh well, Brian will get this. He'll nail this.
I didn't even see.
Yeah. There was some of that because you're famous for having that good accent on TMS. But here's the thing about his performance though. Usually that breaks it for me. I can't do it if it's bad. Mm-hmm. But I was fine with it because it's John freaking Malkovich. Yeah. He's great.
Yeah.
Like his room, the room he's in is electrified when he's in it. And I find him just so compelling. It didn't matter. So it was fine. Right. He could have been Armenian. You know, he could have been whatever. It didn't matter.
Right. Malkovich, the name is Ukrainian. So, I mean, so you would think possibly he's got some, roots there somewhere, right? Possibly.
Yeah but where accents aren't genetic.
Maybe he grew up with a grandpa or something, or
right. That's true. Maybe he has very little experience with what a real Russian actually sounds like, because
wonder if that's how he got the job.
Ukrainian, Czechoslovakian.
I like Dunaway's idea. Right. He showed up for the thing and they all went, oh, yeah, you're Malkovich. That's good. Get in here.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got the job. We didn't even have to listen to you audition.
Well, that's the other thing is I'll bet that's kind of true with him. If he agrees to be in your movie, I think people just move out of the way and say, yep, come on in.
Yeah.
You're the water's fine. Yeah.
You definitely, once you cast him, you definitely start writing the role a little differently.
Well, and also he made the role his own. Like you really felt like he was the guy. Every other character in this movie could have been played by alternate actors, mm-hmm. and you would have had the exact same movie.
Mm-hmm.
I
agree.
Like, you don't need Ed Norton if you can get Sean Penn or Sam Rockwell. It's like the character itself is so interchangeable on its face.
I agree, but the more I thought about it, is there anybody better at trying to hype you up about something that is basically boring as mud than Matt Damon. Because I'm not saying playing cards is boring. I'm saying for Brian, watching somebody play cards.
Yeah, it's a really.
Let's get right to it.
Do you watch any of the like the World?
What do you think the answer is that before you even ask?
No, I'm thinking no.
Right.
I really enjoy those, actually.
What about like other like competitive stuff that people watch? You know, like what's your sports world, Brian Dunaway?
You like football?
So I'm okay with football most days because it gives me an excuse to eat chips and to walk around the house and not really watch. Okay, because that's kind of how I watch football. It's kind of like, oh, come in, like, oh, did you see that? Cool.
Yeah. All right.
But sitting and staring, you know, longingly while people play,
not really your bag. So do you have, is there anything outside of that where you are riveted in a competition, something
where
that's
it comes
visual?
To sports? No, because I'm of the thought and the mindset that, things that are active like that and that are so, interactive with the individual, I don't really like to watch them. I like playing football. I like playing cards. I like playing basketball. I like all these things, but watching them, not Brian's bag.
I'm kind of with you. Now, this isn't to say I enjoy a good football game. I'm mostly a playoff Super Bowl kind of guy. I like when things are coming to their you know, penultimate moments and then their finals. That's when I get excited.
Yeah,
And I can get
into the party. I like the party surrounding it.
Yeah. I was just gonna say the kind of ambient world that builds around such things is really great. There's a sound and a rhythm and a vibration to that I love. And I love a live hockey game. It just puts me great place. Like, I can't stand a hockey on TV. So it's like this weird, you know, you got to be in the place to enjoy it.
See, it's funny. Yeah, exactly. Like if I'm in the stadium watching a hockey game, I'm riveted, or a baseball game or whatever. But watching, there are certain games I just can't sit and watch on TV. Baseball, hockey, or two of them. I can watch
tennis.
Jeez. I don't even know if being there would make a difference for me with tennis. Yeah. Golf, you know. Yeah. Golf would probably be the worst.
Yeah.
But they do enough with the World Series of Poker and stuff to kind of keep it interesting with, you know, showing you everybody's hole cards, showing you obviously the turn and the river and the flop and all that. And also even showing you how much money each of them has. So you can say, oh, well, if Johnny Chan puts Phil Hellmuth all in, even if Phil Hellmuth
just
has
saying the names are boring me. Go ahead.
Come on.
All right.
But here's the thing, like Brian Ibbett, you've already got sort of a tendency toward the kind of, and I don't mean just because you like Vegas, but I mean you like the game of chance, and you like the where the skill comes into the games of chance, and like this seems like your bag completely to me. Like it's when they're talking all the lingo,
all
right?
The terms, yeah.
I'm thinking, I'll bet Ibbett's nerding out.
I'll splish the pot as much as I feel like you, son of beach.
Yeah, son of beach. He could not stop saying that Oreo freak.
I do. I like the lingo, and I do. I'll just go out on record right now and say I do like this movie. I like it. It's not my favorite movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Right. I agree 100%. If poker and watching that kind of thing is your jam, this is steeped heavily in the culture, in the language. It's fantastic if you're into it.
Okay.
If you're not, you feel like you're watching somebody talking about inside baseball. I figure it's probably like how most of my family feels when I'm watching something like Sneakers, the movie.
Sure.
And it's just like, we could care less about the lingo, Brian. And
I like that you distinguished that it was Sneakers, the movie that you watched.
I wanted to make sure people didn't think I was right
staring at a pair of shoes.
About boring watching Sneakers. That's about as.
But that's funny because that actually points to my big complaint about the film, which is that it's painted with poker paint, but really it's just an addict, every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in kind
of
trope.
Which is really a sports movie series of tropes, more than anything else.
Or an alcohol
right?
series of tropes, or a...
But it's not...
Drugs.
But it's not an addiction movie. Like, ultimately, it's like he's just finding his place in the world. He's not actually, you know what I mean?
He doesn't enter
recovery or die at the end of the movie, is what I'm saying.
Okay, right.
Like, and a sports film, though, like, it has all the beats, all of the up-and-coming amazing athlete who faces trouble and turmoil and has the things pulling him away and the rugged relationship with the woman who leaves him. And just, like, I felt like you could just have taken, I don't know, The Replacements and just written it about poker. It's kind of
they pretty much and they pretty much did is and that's what I there's a couple of things I like about this movie, even though it bored me to tears most times. It was the fact that they had this flip on the addiction type film, because it was a little bit of a flip, because you think that's where they're going to fight, but actually you turn to and go, no, this is not just an addiction. This is an actual dream of this guy, and he's really good at it, which I feel like are probably a lot of competitive poker players fight against, because it's hard to explain your passion and desire to do something that most people consider a vice.
Well, and then that kind of makes Gretchen Mol out to be kind of the bad guy.
Because he's
good at something. He only stopped doing it because he had one fall, and she probably swooped in at that point and said, well, then you should probably stop doing this. Never do this again. Promise me you'll never do this again, and I'll continue to have sex with you.
Right.
And screw this movie for not telling us what went on there. Like, that's the thing. The movie doesn't care about its characters. It only cares about the game and the cool vibes and all this stuff.
Right.
And it never actually just gives you 1 minute of what is actually going on here. And it just portrays him lying to her, which, I mean, yeah, she should have left him. I guess it made that point. But it's not like we know what was going on for them before, or
they infer a lot of that, and you're supposed to fill in the blanks, and I think it was a bit much.
He couldn't have been happier when she packed her stuff up.
I know, right?
Like,
she finally
was
did
no
it.
Moment.
She finally
yeah.
did it. Good. I kept telling her she should do it, and he kind of smiles a little bit.
Yeah, now I can go gamble freely and not think about it. Yeah, exactly.
But it's funny because that, you know, it sets him up as, it makes you think at the beginning that he's this character that has a problem and he needs to stay away from cards because of that problem. Right. And then it's like the movie just all of a sudden says, well, you know what? Actually, this is what he's born to do. We should be happy at the end of the movie that he's going to go do that because he's good at it. And we're happy for him, instead of, oh no, he's going against the thing that he said he'd never go against. And the big turning point, or not turning point, the big, the place where I have an issue with that, where it turns from being like, all right, he's good, he's in control, he knows what he's doing, he's going to be all right, and this is what he was born to do, so he should do it. The only point that kind of I have a problem with is during the poker game with Malkovich, with Titty KGB, he has what he needs. He's got a little extra scratch to walk away. He gets up and walks away, and it's the whole, calling Marty McFly chicken kind of
double or nothing, double or nothing.
Right. The Marty McFly chicken is like, wait a minute. Okay. Aren't we supposed to believe that we have to root for him, but if we feel like he's got a problem and now he's got no safety net
So that's why it's so important that they portray him catching Malkovich's tail before that. And he does. They don't explain it. You have to follow along really closely.
Right.
But when Malkovich checks the inside of the cookie the first time and they show Matt Damon's face, recognize, oh, there's something here to this. I got to remember this. Like, you're supposed to get all this. If you're not really up with what's going on, though, right? Like, if you're watching a boxing movie and you've never seen boxing before, and, you know, and it's like, oh, there's the magic uppercut. I don't know what an uppercut is. So I might, it's going to be real dissatisfying when, like you say, he doesn't walk away a winner.
Not only that, but he's got, there's some really good acting going on in that scene when he figures out the tell. The Matt Damon face is some really good Matt Damon face. Like, it's high quality stuff. And then, I still don't exactly understand what the tell is, though. Like,
that's what pissed me off.
Have we said what the name of this movie is yet? By the way, it's Rounders.
Look at the title of the podcast.
Okay, it's Rounders, everybody. Okay, go ahead, Randy. You were saying.
I was just gonna say, it's not actually explicitly explained, as far as I could see, but I went back and watched through the last sequence again, and I think it's either Malkovich looks at the filling of an Oreo when he's pondering bluffing, which is to say he doesn't have a pat hand, right, or he looks at the filling of an Oreo to see whether or not to bluff, as in if he breaks it apart and it goes on two sides. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I assumed.
Oh, really? No, I don't think it has to do like a flip of the coin, a flip of the Oreo. I think when he doesn't have it, he
eats
does
a
the
cookie.
Oreo.
Sure,
eats a
okay.
Cookie.
Right, you always go with the simpler explanation, sure. But I'm just saying, like, it you can make it as complicated as you want. The point is that Damon started noticing, and that is the most insane, ridiculous thing. Damon is the best poker player in the Northeast, and he's just now getting the tell of the guy that's been cleaning him out? Like, no freaking way. They actually show him in possession of books of how to catch people's tells. Like, this just, like, I don't know.
Here's a paragraph. Really, here's a paragraph I just found on the Rounders 1988 FAQ. Teddy's KGB tell was that when he had nothing and was bluffing, he would only break open his Oreo cookies but not eat them. But when he would have a winning hand, he would not only break open his Oreos, but he would also eat them. So he would eat them when it was a winning hand.
Oh, really?
Hand.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what this says. Now, whether this is
better.
Accurate.
I feel more satisfied now.
God, that's a hard tell to come up with just one time. Well, okay, one time that we saw that he broke his Oreo open, closed it back up, and put it back in his tray.
No, he did it the first time he cleans out Matt Damon. When he takes Matt Damon's grand at the beginning, he does it a couple of times, the Oreo thing. And
he's eaten so many Oreos, I could kind of see where you'd overlook it.
No,
I mean,
he's
like always got an Oreo in his mouth. No matter where he's at, it's like Oreos. How's he not 600 pounds?
This guy is on the top of a poker empire in New York State, and he's got this blatant tell, and nobody's noticed it.
Nobody's ever picked up on it. It's not even like an eye twitch. It's not like he scratches the side of his face. No, he is actually physically picking up something in a tray that is on the table, picking it up, breaking it open, and nobody has ever picked up on it.
I thought good about point. That too. I'm like, I thought about that. I was like, oh, well, nobody's seen it, but then I also tried to remember how Malkovich's character was seen by the public or the inside guys in that area. I think no one, it's kind of like the boss. If you play the boss at golf, you gotta lose. Matt Damon wasn't really looking at him as the boss. He was looking at his competition, and I only fault Matt Damon for not seeing it. I don't blame the other people for not seeing it. Maybe it was his kryptonite.
Yeah. Listen, his partner over there in the freaking long underwear and stupid hat, he doesn't know anything. He can't tell anything. Like,
maybe it's new.
Grandma, is that what they kept calling him? Grandma?
Grandma.
Grandma. G-R-A-M-A. So it's grandma.
Grandma.
But they call it grandma.
Okay. Yeah. He was awful. He's the worst character in the entire thing. He like talked like, he talked like Tony Soprano. He had this fashion sensibility of freaking Napoleon Dynamite. Like, I don't
love the fact that he walks around with a bowler hat and like a shirt with like gross stains, like a wife beater shirt with the most disgusting stains on it.
Yeah.
Now, was that the thing that Gross got out this week?
No,
was Grandma?
No, Grandma didn't gross me out.
Oh, let's see. All right, hold on. Didn't even think about that.
I had something for this. Give me a minute.
All right, what was it?
But that guy's name is Michael Rispoli, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Rispoli.
Yeah, this is a working actor. Like, when you look at his list, it's like, I don't remember him in Kick-Ass. I don't remember him in Pain and Gain. I don't remember him in The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, but he's in all these movies. He's willing to take little roles, is what I'm saying.
Mm.
Right.
You guys would be surprised, I think, what I thought was gross, because the actual thing itself isn't that gross, but it's just the use of it. Mm. So if that gives you any hints, I don't know if that'll give you a hint or not. But
I kept trying to figure out how Malkovich was going to gross you out with Oreos. I wasn't sure what he was doing wrong, but I was like, maybe he left it on the card table, and Scott's imagined his cigarette butts there or something. I just couldn't.
Those disgusting plastic trays that he keeps his.
That's disgusting.
I will not keep
food in those plastic trays.
That's true.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, I like that he was treating them like poker chips, though. It was kind of cool. But
yeah, that was really clever.
Fun. Yeah, it was all right. But I'll save you guys some pain here. It was Oreo related. It's this close up shot of him peeling him apart and eating them on camera, and all the lip smacking noises that makes. I can't do that. And this is coming from a guy who occasionally, with Brian Ibbett on the morning stream,
will
eat Oreos exactly on the air. So it sounds hypocritical, but I'm just saying there's something about this like almost pornographic Oreo eating. It's, I couldn't do it.
I was almost going to eat Oreos all throughout my my intro.
You could. You probably got 3 or 4 boxes of those things.
I do. There. I have. I still have fireworks. The ones with the ones with the pop rocks in them.
Oh my
gosh. I don't know how many different Oreos I still have in my room here.
Will there ever be a more unnecessary and more gross eating sequence than Denethor in Return of the King?
No.
Pretty rough.
I mean, the reason that's rough, though, is because it is intentionally rough, and I wonder if there's anything that wasn't meant to be that gross but is. There's probably something. I can't think of it.
It's just so, like, it's one of the few things I remember so clearly about that movie.
Yeah.
Like, like
that's what made it so hard to watch Fringe initially.
Yeah. Good point. Good point.
I forgot. That guy
doesn't have like chicken grease still smeared all over the sides of his face.
Yeah, that was gross. Plus, you don't need, was it Mary or Pippin singing the whole time? Like, it's just a bit much. Right. It was hard to watch.
That really takes it up a notch.
Yeah.
Small man singing thing.
kicks it way up there. But Rounders, directed by John Dahl. Guy I'd never heard of, done a bunch of other random stuff. He's fine. Whatever.
It's pretty good. He does good stuff. I mean,
you don't have any other connections to him, Scott? Like anything that you're like, oh yeah.
Not really. Let's see. You know what? Let me remind myself. So last I looked at this bald guy, he had also done nothing I heard of.
Something called Joyride.
Okay, he's a TV director now.
Yeah, that's all he does now is TV.
And he directed some really good episodes of Justified, my friend. Like, if you look through them and actually go look up their synopsis, you go, oh yeah, that was awesome.
Mm. Yeah, he's done some good episodes of a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
Californication, House of Cards, Dexter.
Those are good Justified Shameless episodes.
Iron Fist, which has been overly derided in my opinion.
I agree. I really like Iron Fist.
Yeah.
I think
Breaking Bad. Which episode of Breaking Bad did he do?
The Fly one. Let's just kidding.
I think he's a lot better TV director, and here's why. I think Rounders tried to pack in too much in too short of a time, and the thing that bored me to tears about this movie mostly was the fact that Matt Damon kept quoting people that I've never heard of and kept using all these different terms, and every conversation was just laced. Mm. I mean, covered in poker terms, and I couldn't focus. I felt like I was on the outside.
There's one thing I keep thinking about that, because it is like a sports movie in that regard, right? If you don't know the sport, you're kind of left out. But there's also a thing here where poker as an activity is very much in your head. And so in order for it to be on film, you have to have a lot of narration, right? He's telling you a ton of things that he's thinking. I actually wonder if this makes a better book than
movie. I think a book would be great. I think I didn't feel like the dialogue was delivered too slowly. As a matter of fact, they kept coming at you. The only problem was I couldn't get any traction on it. And also, one thing that I noticed that kind of made me feel like maybe I would feel more invested is if I actually knew what they had in their hand, because they never showed an actual full hand. Mm-hmm. They talked about what the hand was, but they never actually said, okay, here's what's on the table. Here's what's in my hand. Okay, cool.
I was trying to decide how I felt about that.
I forgive it for that.
Mm. Yeah, because a lot of movies, poker movies, even, you know, non-movies where it's about something very specific that not everybody knows every single thing about, they'll like say, now a tell is when some guy will like scratch the side of his face, or, you know, and they had the perfect thing for that with Matt Damon's narration. They easily could have done that. And the fact that they didn't, I felt like it made it a better
I think that's film. I think that's the reason why this movie sits around 50% on Rotten Tomatoes in most places. It's right in the middle, because you can't quite, it's like you can't really say it's a bad movie, but you can't really get far into it and really like love it.
It's just average.
If that maybe makes sense.
But the acting, we haven't brought this up yet. I think the acting across the board is really solid, except for maybe Gretchen Mol's not that great. She's all right, but whatever.
I love Famke Janssen's character. I wish we could have had more.
Yeah, she was super interesting. She was
serious
great.
Boy movie. Like, this is such a boy movie. Yeah. You look at the poster, and you're thinking, okay, this is going to be a poster of about five men sitting around a poker table, staring back at you.
Yeah,
and right. Like it's got Walter Matthau in it. He should be on the poster. And somehow
Martin Landau,
Gretchen Mole is in between. Right. It looks like a movie about a love triangle where Matt Damon and Ed Norton are fighting over Gretchen Mole. That's what the movie looks like on the poster. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it doesn't really. Martin Landau, John Malkovich, who else we have not mentioned? John Turturro, we mentioned him. A bunch of guys from The Sopranos that weren't on The Sopranos yet, but would be.
Right.
It's really well acted, and I have to say, I'm not really a fan of early Matt Damon movies. Like, they all kind of, I don't know what it is. There's something too youthful about him or something punky about him. But he's really good in this. He's amazing in this, and Ed Norton kills it. I think Ed Norton's amazing in this. In fact, I had this question that I wrote down about Ed Norton as the character of Worm. I feel like he doesn't do this stuff anymore. Like, I feel like he's very quiet now. There's not a lot happening. Like, not since like the 2008 Hulk movie. Just been kind of quiet. And
yeah, totally.
I don't know why. I mean, I know he's been in things. He was in Moonrise Kingdom, which was great, and some other things, but
all of that guy's movies.
Yeah, every Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
I feel like Norton is probably due for like a really good series TV show, like doing an FX Fargo style thing. He'd be great in something.
Like a detective.
I am blown away by FX, by the way. Oh my gosh, casting Mad Max in this Taboo series. I just started watching Taboo, and oh my gosh,
it's really good.
It is amazing.
It's really good. That's actually his. Yeah. He's an executive producer on that. What's his name? Freaking, I should know it. Mad Max, anyway. That guy.
You know what I want him in, and I know this is gonna sound a little bit crazy, but I want there to be a major like HBO funded produced Blade Runner TV series, and I want someone like Ed Norton in there. If you look at Blade Runner now, like the new movie, and kind of think about it, it's nothing but skinny people, like really skinny people.
Nobody eats well in that future.
And it works okay. It works just fine because they're in a they're in a bad place, right? Like they're skinny by because they have to be. But something about Ed Norton, when I see him, I'm just like, gosh, he's such a waif. But he's got an oversized personality, and I could just see him dialing it way down to that thing he does when he's being serious and glaring. And he would just be perfect to be, the is he or isn't he replicant who's, continuing the adventures in a TV series.
He makes what he does look easy. He's one of those actors where I just feel like there's an ease at which he falls into a character and you don't have to think about the acting. He's just being the thing he's supposed to be. And this is a year after Fight Club. This same year, 1998, that Rounders came out, he ended up doing that other big one. Oh, American History X was that year.
Yeah.
Like busy couple of years for that guy. And I don't know. I just feel like we should be hearing more from him now, and we're not so much. I don't know.
Is it my imagination, or have we done a lot of 1998 films lately? I feel maybe that was a crap year.
We have 87, 88, and 97, 98, for some reason, are really heavy for us.
Yeah. The 98 was a big year for movies. Also, this was, you got to remember, this is, probably not our, certainly not our first, but the first Weinstein movie since since the Weinstein stuff happened, right?
Oh, wow.
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, this is Miramax. This is a Miramax deal produced by the Weinstein brothers, blah, 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 all this stuff.
Matt Damon, go ahead.
Have we done Armageddon? That's another 98.
Armageddon.
Yes.
All right. I can never remember if that's one of the ones that we've always talked about doing and have never done it.
That was the one that we thought for a long time that we had done and hadn't. And then when we finally did it, now we think we haven't done it.
Right. Okay. That's it. That's exactly it. Okay.
Yeah.
Dark City was 98. The Truman Show, Shakespeare in Love, Big Lebowski. That wouldn't be good, obviously. Blade, the first Blade would be great.
Yeah. I'd watch Blade again.
Here's some bad news
Ronin,
for you.
Out of Sight.
Right. Odd Couple 2. Got to see it. Yeah, that was a great one. My Giant with Billy Crystal. Never saw it.
Bad movie.
Can't wait to see it.
Bad movie.
Godzilla. That was
it was so bad.
We have to see that one. That's absolutely
the Matthew Broderick one. It's so bad.
Yep.
You guys.
Yep. Spear, which we've seen here.
Negotiator would be a good one.
Yep. Eddie Murphy, when he first started coming back to a crap show, The Holy Man, I don't know if you remember, was like, Bowfinger was okay, right? Wasn't he in that?
Yeah, Bowfinger was good.
Like, right? Yeah. From that time.
So Bowfinger wasn't really a Eddie Murphy movie as much as it was a Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy joint.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Our 1997 list includes Face Off, The Game, Gattaca, Con Air. And by the way, 1997 includes freaking Matt Damon winning an Oscar for writing for Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
And he acted in, of course, he was the lead.
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe that he's coming off that here. This doesn't seem like a coming off of an Oscar win movie.
Well, probably because it was being filmed before he had that Oscar in his hand, even, like, you know.
Probably.
Well into production or whatever. But, you know, I look at him now and he's you know, these days he's seasoned and older and.
Jason Bourne.
Yeah. But not only that, he's, you know, he's cameos in things that are huge and. You know, he was in that Interstellar thing for a hot minute, and he just, there's something more, there's a maturity about him now that I really like and look forward to, but back in the, like, the swoopy 90s hair days that he had, I wasn't really a fan of any of that, but this, for whatever reason, he's great in this, everybody's great in it. That's my big hang-up with the movie is everybody's pretty great. I didn't think Gretchen Mol was very good, but whatever. Everyone else is really good.
John Turturro, man, he just nailed it.
Yeah, but name a bad John Turturro performance.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point.
That thing we watched, Barton Fink.
Barton Fink. Even that was good. He was great.
I didn't think he was that good.
I felt like we could do better.
But the thing here is you're absolutely right, Scott. That, and if you look back at over the last few minutes, all we've talked about is the script being the problem. And I really agree. Like, these are great actors. They're shot well. The music is the leftovers from Shawshank Redemption from top to bottom for some reason. Like, it's all fine, but we just don't have the substance for them to chew through. Like, if you, a movie from the previous year that another 97 film is As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson. And if you think about it, man, that script is just better.
Maybe that was just literal. Maybe it was As Good As It Gets, and this next year was just like whatever we have.
You know, I see. So that script, literally, that movie was meant to be as good as it ever is going to get.
Yeah, that was the end. It's like, okay, hey, this is it.
Oh, okay.
But another thing about films at that time is they had more comedy than Rounders did. Rounders had almost nothing in terms of comedy.
Oh, there was no levity, really.
There was one sequence of Ed Norton right before he gets out of prison taking cigarettes from people and then throwing them away.
Yeah.
That was it. That was all of the comedy.
Which, by the way, in the trivia says it was a hugely intentional thing. He was supposed to be a smoker in this movie, and I guess Ed Norton is like this outspoken, hate smoking, anti-smoking
evangelist. Yeah, a body purifier kind of guy.
Yeah, so he was like, F that, and so instead he made it like
It works really well because it really makes him out to be a bigger dick than he probably was originally written. Do you think, all right, so we talked about the script then being the problem, kind of Blade Runner, this is the movie better if you strip out Matt Damon's his monologue?
That's so funny you brought that up. I just on my very next list I have well, how do we feel about the narration? That's totally funny.
It's definitely more better for people who know every little thing about poker. I think people who don't, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Do you think it's better for people who don't know poker?
Way more perfecter.
I think it's way more perfecter. I think if this movie was 4 hours long, you could get rid of that part that he was doing, which was the tighten the film up that really needed to be. It really needs to be a TV series. I mean, if you really wanted to write this script and show it on TV, it really needs like 10 episodes to really pull you in and make it enjoyable, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, I've seen movies that I think just handle the whole card thing better. I think 21 handled it better. I think even the Dustin Hoffman Tom Cruise thing,
Rain Man,
even though it's just one sequence, handles the entire world of cards and how they work.
But that's just a quick stroke. I mean, if you really wanted to, because this was supposed to really pull us in.
Yeah, no, I agree. I completely agree with what you're saying. But to me, it's like, what was the Oh yeah, the Color of Money one, and then the one it was based on with the
Hustler.
Hustler.
And that was mostly character development. That was working with our characters, where this one doesn't really work with the characters. This is trying to give us a whole slew of interesting characters and just not enough time to explore all.
You think we'll ever get to a place where, like, CCGs, video game card games, like the Hearthstone or whatever, do you think we could ever get to a place where they're also such a part of a potential underbelly of society that there's like mobsters involved? And
absolutely, that yes. will
oh
be
oh my god, that's yes, hilarious. Like Magic the Gathering Rounders.
Yeah, like, right. Yeah. I would watch that.
I knew he had the scepter of
Look, you got
Jacob, but
should have thrown up.
Make sure he plays it.
I'd like to see the kingpin of esports. I would love to see that.
The Black Lotus was fake. I could see it.
Yeah, I could see it from across the room. Nobody can afford it.
You've been dealing yourself tree mana from the bottom of the deck. We caught you.
Yeah.
I just want to say yes. And the deal here is
tree mana.
It's coming a lot later than you think. Because what makes these movies isn't people like Matt Damon being interested in Texas Hold'em. What makes these movies is these elderly producers being interested in Texas Hold'em. Mm. And that's a carryover from decades ago. So the people now who are loving Hearthstone and get a bunch of money together, like 40 years from now, they're going to make movies like that. Maybe not about Hearthstone specifically, but like that.
Yeah, I could see.
That's how you got Power Rangers. You're welcome.
I could see. I could see, like, you know, like literally Magic the Gathering being the point of contention in a dark, smoky room, and that sort of thing for a different generation. Like, I could totally see that being a thing. But that's
you gotta experience it and then grow up and digest it before you can really put this on paper, I think.
Plus, wasn't this right around the time that Texas Hold'em became a thing? Like,
right
prior
Which
to
came
this,
first, Rounders
totally
or
was. Yeah,
right.
Well, I mean, Texas Hold'em's been around forever, so Rounders came later. But
it being like the oh my god, I gotta go home and watch ESPN because World Series of Poker's you man actually is right around this time, and it probably it may have been Rounders, it may have been all the other culture. Pop culture poker things that were going on at the time. But my buddy Alan and I decided, oh, we could totally play poker. Like, we've been playing poker on this online thing and against each other. It's like, oh, we could totally do this. And we went to Central City, which is the gambling town here outside of Denver, and sat down at a table, plunked our money down. And I think we were probably picked off just like those guys with their names on their freaking name tags in Atlantic City in this movie at the Trump Taj Mahal.
Yeah,
probably in about 14 minutes.
Is that where they were, by the way? Was that where they were, the Trump Taj Mahal? Is that what it was?
Yeah. Oh.
I want to ask everybody if you've got a
favorite.
You've got
to be the only person who didn't see that Trump logo emblazoned all over
the place.
I missed it.
I was groaning at it. I want to go around real quick. Everybody, do you have a favorite movie that includes poker playing? I'll even extend that to sort of like any table card game, so you can include Casino Royale if you want to. But
absolutely,
like, anybody have a favorite?
Yeah,
I have a favorite. It's called The Grand, and it's not very well known. It's got Cheryl Hines. It's got Chris Parnell,
Woody Harrelson,
David Cross, and it's kind of like a mockumentary about all these different people kind of going to the World Series of Poker, and it follows each of them and how they build themselves up and make their money and stuff like that. And it's done improv style, and it's so freaking funny.
It's a Zach Penn movie, so if you liked The Avengers, you're going to love The Grand. They're the same, right?
Exactly the same. Wow. But it feels like the Curb Your Enthusiasm of poker movies. It's so funny.
Right. I'm into that. For me, it's Tombstone. And the scene where what's his name? Doc Holliday is just completely jacking those people at the beginning ends up getting out of there with his nasty girlfriend. I like that scene. That's good poker. I mean, it's not about poker, but it features poker. So there you go.
Right.
That's Pharaoh, by the way.
Oh, they were playing Pharaoh. Is that the deal?
Yeah.
What the hell is Pharaoh anyway? I don't know what that is. Is that a game?
It's French poker.
Oh.
I mean, it's very, very similar.
Oh. French poker.
Yeah, we call Patrick a French poker once in a while.
Wee wee poo poo.
Dunaway, do you have a favorite?
Absolutely. We saw it here on Film Sack.
Oh, Maverick.
Maverick.
Well done.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Yeah, good call.
That's a good one.
Yeah, good call. That's about maybe the best part of that movie was the poker playing. I agree with that. Well,
it framed it in a way that I felt like I was having fun.
Mm-hmm. Now this is Jean Grey when she was still Jean Grey, right? When was the no that's not true. She wasn't the first.
That's not like 2001 before.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, she had just been Xenia on a top. I think is the only thing we'd seen her.
Right.
Seen her in before.
Well,
this.
Prior to that, she was the chick on Star Trek that was hormonal, making everybody on the ship go crazy.
Yeah. Did I'm sorry, Randy, did you say what your favorite poker?
No.
I actually, when I included Casino Royale, I decided I'm going to stop there because there's a really important Texas Hold'em game, shoehorned into that movie. But it's actually really well shot and done. And for once, it's a movie with a serious poker sequence where they don't explain the game to the audience. For Pete's sake, I felt like Rounders was spending so much time telling the audience what was going on. Like, shut up. But Casino Royale does it right.
That's true. And I should have said this. It just occurred to me how cool the gambling bits were in Hell or High Water was really good. As far as a recent
gambling
film goes.
Bits.
Oh, yeah.
Had this great song by Coulter Wall in the background and this, like, just insanity. I can never remember his name. The brother that's crazy in that.
Ben Foster.
Ben Foster is, love him, and I never remember his name. But anyway, he's also losing it in there, and I love it. It's really good.
Can I get a call on Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's good. That one fits, sure.
That has been one that is on my shame list. I have never seen it.
Oh, you should see it.
I know it's fantastic from everybody that I respect seems to like it. So I know I need to watch it.
It was like the second or third DVD I ever owned, but I just want to say, like, get your expectations down a bit. It's not that great.
It's
like,
pretty
good
though.
It's a small movie.
It's a small movie, but it's pretty great. It's British mobsters, and that's enough for me. You know,
that's good enough.
That kind of Cockney thing with the just ultra violent whatever, and this was early. What's his beak? I can't give his name either.
Jason Statham, Vinny Jones.
No, the director.
Guy Ritchie. And I feel for you, Dunaway, because for a lot of us, it was like the first time we ever saw Jason Statham and Vinny Jones, and they're both bigger than life by a lot in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, they're great. And there's the, what's his name? Oh, shoot. Anyway, they're always all, oi, you want me? I should rub it out. Like, it's just such a great grunty.
See, I like those things. I kind of have an idea of what the movie is like because I've seen plenty of trailers, plenty of scenes from the movie, but I've never actually sat down and watched it. I really want to focus on it. Now, while you guys were all watching that and watching Rounders and all that crap, I was watching stuff like The Faculty.
Okay.
Because
Famke Janssen's in there too, isn't she?
Yeah, is she was. Same year. And man, I loved, I think the thing that got me into that movie was the soundtrack. I bought the soundtrack right away when it came out. And it had a lot of like Alice in Chains and just doing these cover tunes. And it was... I really liked that movie.
We watched it here on the show, didn't we? Didn't we watch that here?
We watched that. We did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got that scene with John Stewart with a pencil in his eye. Remember that?
Yes.
That's right.
I don't understand how Robert Rodriguez doesn't have, a long, lustrous career of movies like that. Why? Right. What happened? Did he just get to making kids films only? And
I think what happened was, this man is one of those, look, I know just about everybody in Hollywood is movie lovers, but there's certain levels of movie loving. And I think that Robert Rodriguez has a level, an appreciation of not just making films, but watching films and learning the history of films. And I think he's very well versed in that. And I think he's just kind of, he's doing his own thing. I think he made enough money that he's happy, and I'm just putting words in his mouth, but I feel like he's just
plus he's got his whole life. He's got a TV channel he created, and on that channel he's got a From Dusk Till Dawn series that people are actually really fond of.
I love that channel. I watch it every
is it
time
called?
I think
I can't remember
Sleek.
The name of the damn thing. Can't remember the name of the channel.
It's the L Ray Network. L Ray
Network. Yeah,
it's
like he's doing all kinds of crazy stuff, but then I don't think it's been a while since he's done a kids movie.
Are you kidding? He's working on one right now. He's got a Spy Kids coming out in like 6 months.
Yeah, but he's got also right after that in the same year, Machete Kills in Space. He's got
Yeah, Spy Kids is his really only really kids movie, and that's kind of like an anomaly that you can't seem to get away from.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. It's like, it's also got to make another one.
Yeah,
he's going to make five, I think. Like that, it's a lot. It's a big chunk of his career.
But look at this one, Alita: Battle Angel, Ugly Dolls. He's doing a live action Johnny Quest, which could be for kids, I guess.
Oh.
Machete Kills in Space, something called 100 Years back in 2015. Never saw it. It says 2115. How can that be right? What IMDb here jacked up? But like,
you're gonna put that in the time booth.
Yeah, but like Matador, that TV show. This is a lot of adult stuff. The last Planet Terror and Forward. Like there's Spy Kids stuff in there, but it's still mostly adult fare. The point is, I think he is just like a guy who's not happy just doing a movie once in a while. I think he wants to do a whole shitload more than that. And for whatever it's worth, he seems to do it all with a hat on, which is great.
He also it's clear that I forgot what we were talking about, the Faculty.
Yeah.
It's clear that Rodriguez doesn't see that as his strength.
No.
Which is too bad, because as much as I love, a good Danny Trejo hacks up the world movie shot on a $50,000 budget, it's like, I don't think that's his strength. Yeah. I think he's short-selling himself as a director.
Yeah, but you got to say, I mean, 90,
I think he's
90,
enjoying himself.
Oh, of course. But 95's Desperado, that's the business, man. That is the movie for me.
Like, okay, but it's 22 years ago.
It was, and it was great.
Like, you have children that are, younger than that movie. Like,
yeah, two of them.
Think about that.
Two of them, in fact. All right.
I didn't mean to get all the way over here. Hey, Predators, he did that one, too. That had old What's-His-Face in it, didn't it? Didn't that have one of our actors? Wasn't Adrian Brody like?
Oh, yeah, Adrian Brody was in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a broken nose looking face in it.
Yeah,
always
yeah.
Does. Always does.
Yeah. Him and I think he could morph him and Owen Wilson back and forth, and Owen Wilson would just go, wow, every time.
Well, they're kind of like the before and after that picture of noses, right? It's like Adrian Brody is the before.
Yeah.
How did we get all the way over here, by the way? I mean, we're like.
We started with Famke Janssen.
All right. Yeah.
53 years old. She's from the Netherlands.
Wow.
She's amazing. I love her. She's striking even today in a thousand different ways. No wonder Worf, Picard, and Riker all got super hot for her in that episode of Star Trek. But also, she seems really with it. I watched an Ellen interview she did back in like 2003 or something. It was probably related to one of the X-Men sequels or something. But she was unbelievably charming and smart and so you think she should have this accent because she's from that part of the world, but she's pretty much lost it. It's gone, but she can very quickly like speak the languages of her youth, and it's just, she's charming as I want to live next door to her now. She's in her 50s. I want to go over there and say, hey, do you need how's your yard? Do you need any help? I'll trim your trees.
With all this stuff with Weinstein going on, you're going to say something like this.
You want to go trim her hedges.
Right. No,
you're going to be over there knocking on her door. That's a good way to go ahead.
Yeah. But I do have a theory, though. We are, because we're digging into 90s movies, I mean, we're kind of all over the place, but we're going to start seeing a lot of Weinstein movies, whether we like it or
yeah.
not.
Oh, yeah.
That dude had his finger in every...
It's really just a matter of like seeing the thing. You know, it would be with Netflix doing what they're doing with Kevin Spacey and just kind of excising him and the House of Cards stuff. It certainly would be very easy for them to say, you know, that little Weinstein logo that appears before movies, we're going to go ahead and just not show you that.
That's not going to happen. That's just not going to, we're taking that away.
Because that's usually the big reminders that you're watching the Weinstein movie.
Did you guys watch Hemlock Grove?
No.
No,
you should totally check
it out. She's really good in that.
Yeah. She's really
good. In that. I didn't know that. She's also, isn't she also in that James Spader thing? The Blackout or
Blacklist.
Blacklist, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
She's in that, I
thought. She was. Yeah, she was like not a every episode.
Not a major
like
part.
She showed up a couple times.
Yeah. But anyway, the thing with the Weinstein stuff is that it culminated in that 2 a.m. watching of Hateful Eight that I watched.
Oh.
I hadn't seen Hateful Eight yet.
Okay.
And because Tarantino likes those big yellow letters for everything, and likes to pretend like it's 1973 when he makes his movies, and even has the little copyright and true color bullcrap or whatever below the main titles, and he's so into that. Weinstein gets a big old fat Harvey Weinstein bold lettered giant name in that thing, and it was really disconcerting.
See, I've got the Hateful Eight Django two-pack recently, and I didn't know he was involved with any of that stuff. Hey, can I still watch it, though?
You totally should, but here's the thing. All of Tarantino's movies are produced by Weinstein's company, every single one of them.
Well, you know, up to now.
Up till now. His Manson thing he's working on is now Sony picked it up, and he's not doing any Weinstein business. Well, neither is Weinstein, but anyway.
Ibbitt, did you see Hateful Eight?
I did see Hateful Eight, yeah.
It's such a one-trick film. Like, it's like you take a part of a Tarantino film. Like, take the Madsen trauma scene from
Reservoir Dogs.
From Reservoir Dogs. So we're in a warehouse. Put all the other characters from Reservoir Dogs in there. And then make me sit and watch them interact for 2 hours, knowing
I loved it.
I like it.
Yeah, I loved it.
It's just like do something, man. Like, what Tarantino is just doing this one thing over and over and over, and it's just, I don't know, I'm getting really bored really fast.
I really like films where you've got one location, everybody's kind of jammed into this location, there's no getting out of it, and you're kind of trapped like spiders in a mason jar with a little kid outside with a magnifying glass. But
you say everybody like they're different. They're all Quentin Tarantino. People are playing different parts of Quentin Tarantino.
Like, everybody's licking feet. It is awesome.
No, I came away from that thinking I really liked Hateful Eight. And I'll say this one other thing about it. That performance by Jennifer Jason Leigh blew my freaking mind. I thought she was incredible. She was in that.
Insane.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to justify being able to watch these movies again. Okay, so Weinstein, other than putting his money, which he didn't earn by molesting people, granted, okay? Wow. He just earned it. I can't believe we're doing this. Right?
No, you can watch a Weinstein movie without feeling any guilt that you're supporting a creeper, because he's executive producer. That's all he did, was just front the money. Nothing to do with the directing, the writing, the acting.
Yeah, but every time, but think of it this way: like your Netflix subscription, whatever percentage piece of it, pennies perhaps, somehow are in the pocket of Weinstein, or at least the Weinstein company, or at least Miramax, who's owned by the Weinsteins, because everyone's getting paid down the line. It's all residuals. So there's no way of getting away around that. Now, here's my break, or here's my line, and Dunaway, you can decide if this line works for you. He didn't make any of these movies. You're right. He's the money, he's the background, he's the whatever. It's the creative force of those who make the film that I care about. If I find out that Tarantino is Weinstein level douche,
right.
That's when it's not even a principle thing where, like, I refuse and so should you to watch it. For me, it's just, it feels gross for me to watch it. Like, for me to go watch a Kevin Spacey movie right now would be really hard.
Right.
I can't
even
do
the ref.
It
would be really hard for you right now.
Yeah, it would
it's
be.
It's almost like a self-imposed boycott. And lots of times, we have a lot of boycotts down here in the South, okay? And I have seen a lot of towns suffer, even though no one really in that town agrees with whatever the controversy is. But people like go, well, I'm not going to that location because, you know, there's somebody there that does shit stuff, and we're boycotting that whole place. And it's like, but these other people are good people, and they really worked hard to put these buildings up and to, you know, make a living. Is it, you know, I don't know.
It's unfair to them, but it's not.
Well, and it's unfair,
it's not
to
your
us.
Cause. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not you being unfair to those other actors and other people involved that weren't creepy sexual harassers. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that Kevin Spacey was, and he ruined it for everybody. He ruined it for.
I think it's important to be clear. We're talking about criminals doing crimes, and they have victims, and
in this case,
yes, you're absolutely right. There's nothing I can do to take the money back out of Harvey Weinstein's pocket. And even if we did, even if we knocked him all the way down to prison, guy cannot get any more money now. Guess what? If you watch a Lord of the Rings film, there's money going to Bob Weinstein. And as soon as Harvey Weinstein gets out of jail, the money's going to just get handed over to him. Mm-hmm, you can't fix that. But please recognize it. We've been talking for 15 years about The Pianist. It's been 15 years since The Pianist, guys.
I haven't talked one day about The Pianist in the last 15 years.
Okay. And it is The Pianist, by the way.
Sure. Whatever.
Go ahead.
It is a great film that I saw one time, and ever since I have felt like that movie, like we're better off with that movie not existing if Roman Polanski also not exists. Like that's how important it is that his crime not be forgotten, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a good point. I forgot that was a Polanski deal.
Yeah. And I think we're moving to a new place though. Where the place we're moving to is away from, Bill Clinton was a douche, but hey, he's the next president. Show him some respect. I think we're now getting to a place where we're like, we probably don't need to hear from him again. You know, like you had your thing. Plus, you know, you got a huge ticket out of here. Same with Polanski. Same with not Dudley Moore. What's his name? It married his adopted Korean daughter.
Woody Allen.
Jeez, the name would not. It's one of these mornings. Names don't come to me today. But Woody Allen, like, where he's gotten a pass way too long. I feel like we're now done giving out passes.
Thing, I just want to be really clear about what I'm saying. I'm saying that Harvey Weinstein can go away completely. He can disappear from the earth, and we're fine. It's like we're recording this in the days after a relatively credible accusation against a senator from Minnesota has been floated. And a lot of people liked the guy, and a lot of people are really gnashing their teeth about it. It's really hard when you like somebody to find out that maybe there's a big problem there. And I'm just like, why doesn't he just resign? Are you telling me there's no one in the state of Minnesota that could do that job? I mean, it's like, just go away. Like, there's nothing I can do about the Lord of the Rings films that I love and own being a Weinstein property. Nothing I can do. But they could go away, you know?
Right. Yeah, but all I'm saying is it should be, for everybody, it's a personal choice. For me, it's if I got to watch an actor do stuff, that's different than some behind the scenes person, because the behind the scenes person never really had any effect on what I was seeing anyway.
They actually had more impact. They did more power, more money.
No, you're right, and they're the whole reason the actors are even there. I get that. I totally get that. But now you've got a product that's made, and you're done. In the case of these actors, I don't know why it's different, but it is for me. I just can't look at Kevin Spacey and go, "Yeah, I'm going to take you serious." Or it's like me, you know, if you ask me to go listen to like a Bill Cosby record right now, I can't do it.
Right.
I'm not going to laugh at that. I'm not going to never going to laugh at that again.
That is great, David. Oh, sorry. Hey, of course,
I couldn't listen to a Gary Glitter song either for exactly the same reason.
Right.
You know, I watched Baby Driver like about 5 days before this Kevin Spacey thing hit, and I was like, oh man, I think I have a new favorite movie that I'm gonna tell everybody about, and then 5 days later, and nope, not gonna mention it. Nobody.
No, is he? I didn't know he was in that.
Hugely in that.
Is he?
He's kind of the it's about a getaway driver. Mm-hmm. Basically, Kevin Spacey is the guy who hires him for all of his different jobs that he does.
Oh, so that's a significant role.
It's not like he's just a little passing through, barely there. He's pretty prominent throughout the whole thing.
And I'm sorry for like making this into an episode of Unfriend Me. I really don't mean to. But
I don't think, because we're talking about movies. So I mean, yeah, I think we're right in where we're supposed to be at.
And apparently, every week now, we're not only going to have the current news impacting this show, but we're going to end up watching a movie connected to one of these guys.
Yeah.
Right. And I just want to get to the conclusion, and that is, there's a problem of both how men treat women and power and authority coming together. Those are two separate things. You take power and authority, you put it up against how men treat women, and this happens. And you can't just solve one half of the bigger issue. You can't just say, Bill Cosby will never do it again. No, you have to also disempower him completely.
Yeah, I am never watching Leonard Six again. It ain't gonna happen.
It's too bad, because that actually would have been a great film sack movie. But I'm with you. I can't. There's no way we could watch that now and not right. and not spend the entire episode not talking about the film.
Yeah, I'm not right. about to. I'm not about to binge I Spy. I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
Right. Right.
Good, because you know? I'm telling you, we'll never see a Louis C.K. film on this podcast.
That's the other thing is I can't. That really rubs me. That rubs my cheese because that guy makes things
don't
I'm interested
rubbing
in.
Your cheese.
You know.
Wow.
Right.
Like I was don't really looking forward. Do you know that something in Pete's? What's it called? That he made like a. Sitcom without an audience, but it was filmed like one, and it was in a bar, and Alan Alda was in it. And
oh yeah,
what's that called? It was a series that he made that almost bankrupted him. He said, and they only showed it originally as like a pay per view thing, but now it's coming to Hulu or something. I was so excited about that back when I heard about it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to patiently wait for this to hit one of these streaming services I pay for. Can't wait to see it. Now I just don't freaking care.
Right.
I don't care right. now.
Hey, look, there has become something that I'm not really used to in my movie watching, which is deciding whether or not I should watch a film based on every level of production. And it's not something I'm used to. And I think we're all here. We're film lovers. And I think the listeners are film lovers. And it's something that I've never really had to focus on. But it certainly has narrowed down some of the films that I will not...
Yeah,
you know, probably partaking in the future. So I thought it was just
it's weird, isn't
question.
It? It's weird.
I haven't
the main
made
thing.
I haven't made a decision yet. I'm sure. just saying I'm trying to figure it out. I think we're all trying to figure it out. And
yeah,
that was
it
really
is. It is a thing we just didn't have to think about before. When we go see Back to the Future, it's a self-contained decision. We didn't have to think about anything else. This stuff was always happening. It was always happening. We, as far as we know, and there's plenty more to come. I'm sure every day there's something new. So, you know, I'm prepared to. I'm prepared to be disappointed every time I see a Weinstein logo, and I'm way more disappointed when I have to look at the face of, you know, an actor who's done the deed.
Right, right. And imagine, Randy almost made us watch American Beauty.
Yeah.
See?
No, I didn't.
I told you. I
no,
told
I didn't.
You.
You tried to get us to once. You asked for us to
no
do
way.
It once.
There's no way.
One time you said...
I do not want to watch that movie with you, ever. Right. Ever. That's been the case for... Since before we started making this podcast, I don't want to watch that movie with you.
You didn't even know. Before there was a show, before we even knew each other, you knew that if this if any of this ever happened, there'd be no American Beauty. Okay.
No way, no.
Got it.
Yeah. Hey, steering back to Rounders really quick.
Oh, yeah, Rounders.
Can I bring up a chick in the bucket?
Oh, my gosh, please do, because I was wondering if anyone had one.
Worm is the chick in the bucket.
Yes.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
disappears about 3/4 of the way through the film, and he's the one, he's basically... Matt Damon's kryptonite. He's the one that could screw Matt Damon up at the World Series of Poker in Vegas where he's heading, you know, and it could be
the key to the trope is that you've left him wherever he was. So for the rest of all time, right? He's just there. Mm-hmm. And it also frees up the person that left him there to, you know, to sort of do what they're going to do. Like it's there's more to it than just whatever happened to the guy. There's this extra, okay, now Will Smith can go off on adventures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, he can definitely come back in and screw things up. I honestly, and I saw this movie back in theaters in 98, and I'd forgotten a lot of it. I honestly was thinking, oh, I bet Malkovich is going to pull out a bloody and beaten Edward Norton out here in a second, and, you know, that's going to change the way this poker game is going. It's like, oh, no, I guess not. All right, well, certainly something's going to happen before Matt Damon gets in that cab and drives away. Oh, no,
nope.
Nothing happens.
No, nope.
That should be its own book, like Tropy Expectations.
Yeah.
Totally.
It makes me wonder if that is why he's so low down, even though I think he had a pretty significant part, he is so low down in the credits. Like, the credits for this film have everybody you expect at the top, Matt Damon, Gretchen Mol, John Malkovich, and so on, John Turturro. They're all at the top of this thing. You have to go to the see full cast link and then dig down even further before you run into... In fact, I think Famke Janssen beat him. Yeah. Yeah, jeez. Let's see. Hold on. I'm trying to find him here now, and I can't. Anyway.
There he is. He's
isn't there somewhere?
No, he's above Famke Janssen.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Right. Yeah, but it is.
Isn't that
that's
weird?
That's really, really surprising, because he's on the movie poster, so you'd think that automatically grants him the first half of the cast list.
And he was a big star then. It wasn't like he was a nobody. So it's weird. Just really weird. But
it's
not
alphabetical order. It's not in order of appearance.
Yep.
But if you ask me, Landau needs to be higher in this list too. I feel like he's...
I love him.
I So you said your
what's up with that hair, Martin Landau?
you said your favorite sequence in the film. Mine is when Damon goes and has a drink with Landau in a bar, and Landau tells a story about he was destined to be a rabbi, and he couldn't find his faith and goes to New York and loses his family.
Becomes that a just, lawyer. Yeah.
Like, I totally forgot it was an actor. Mm-hmm. I just felt like it was some old judge telling a story.
I miss that guy. He's awesome. He shouldn't have died. Yeah. Well, he probably should have because he was really old. But but he was awesome. And this is, what, 4 years after Ed Wood or something close to that?
Right.
Where he really got his big revival, and then you'd see him in so many things since. I'm glad, because what an interesting, unique deal that dude is.
We're gonna
I didn't realize he just died in July.
Just 3 months ago. We're going to see his name at the Oscars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we better, or they're doing it wrong. They should do a memoriam thing at the Oscars, and then they should do a whole list of the perverts. They should do that. Just have the
remember these people.
Yeah.
Forget these.
Yeah, just have some
forget these people. Like that idea.
Just have some nice, you know, like something like this. And then just show them one after another.
Harvey Weinstein.
And then when it's a famous actor, there's a little bit of dialogue under that music.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's great. Have Kevin Spacey go. Hoo-ha.
Yeah, oh, no, that's not...
Yeah,
wow.
See? Yeah.
You're predicting Spacey's death already. Wow,
oh, okay. I just realized I can never watch LA Confidential with the same excitement.
No, or even Usual Suspects.
Oh, no. Usual Suspects is on top of my list of things I'm pissed about. And the worst part thing about that is there's probably more to that than we know, but the director of that, Brian Singer, is also heavily accused of many things that have yet to truly come to light. And I feel like I'm not maybe able to see much Singer work either.
Oh, so. which throws away all of House, the TV show House.
Yeah, that's a lot of House
that's
gone.
That's his TV show.
Although, maybe executive producer stuff's maybe different. But here's the thing. Somebody's going to hear me say that now for the fourth time and go, Scott, freaking blah, blah, blah. Make your own choice. Why do you have to react like this?
Is it going to be tracking?
Yeah. Can you separate the art from the artist? My answer to that is no. And it's just me. I'm saying you do what you want to do. Go rent all the Kevin Spacey movies you can eat. I don't care. I'm telling you what I'm doing. That's it.
Mm.
That's tasty
Kevin Spacey movies.
Mm.
Kevin Spacey movie. Hey, you know, this has been going on for a long time. Like you guys said, there's been rumors and actors and directors who've done weird stuff that you would swear never to watch again. And I remember the first time I had to make that decision personally was after watching Jeepers Creepers. I actually really thought that movie was really good and I enjoyed it. And then come to find out later on, he was doing some very questionable things, accused of, had charges against him for molestation of a 12-year-old. And so I was like, oh man, now I can't watch any of these. And I remember that feeling was just devastating. And it's just like times 10 now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like everywhere.
Well, you just thought it was more unique then, you know? It's not.
Yeah,
it's not
exactly.
Now. Turns out everyone's a douche.
Everyone's a douche.
Everybody's a douche.
You're going to have to switch to watching porn to avoid watching the sexual. Oh, no, darn it. Ron Jeremy.
Oh, dang it. Who would have thought Ron Jeremy with all his... All his squeaky clean
his
lifestyle.
I'd been assuming it for like 20 years or something. I don't know. My thoughts about Ron Jeremy go back farther than my thoughts about Roman Polanski. I don't understand how this is new.
Yeah, Ron, it shouldn't be new, but it apparently all that is old is new again. We'll be right back. Casper, Casper, Casper. Casper.com. Oh, man. Do I love me some Casper? Who are they, you're saying? Well, they're a sleep brand. They continue to revolutionize the line of products that you'd use to sleep on to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Their mattresses are designed by humans for humans. They combine multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface that's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. And their breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. And they're not just any mattress company. They offer a wide array of products for you to check out and ensure you have an overall better sleep experience. You can order online. It's very easy. Delivered to your door in a compact box. Free shipping and free returns in the U.S. and Canada. And you get a 100-day risk-free trial. That's right. I did this.
And considering you and I spend a third of our lives on a mattress, it's important you truly sleep on the one that you want the most. And you want to test it before you're committing. That's why they give you 100 nights to try it out. Start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper. Get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/filmsack and use the promo code filmsack at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. That's $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/filmsack and use the promo code filmsack at the end there. Oh, I really do like them, you guys, and you will too. Check them out. All right. Clips.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's do some clips here. I've got a number of them, and they begin with this one. Wait, where is it? Ooh. Okay. There they are. Describing poker for noobs is this scene. So here's some narration for you.
The game in question is No Limit Texas Hold'em. Minimum buy-in, $25,000. A game like this doesn't come together often outside the casinos. The stakes attract rich flounders, and they in turn attract the sharks. No Limit Texas Hold'em is the Cadillac of poker. Each player is dealt two cards face down. Five cards are then dealt face up across the middle. These are community cards everyone can use to make the best five-card hand. The key to the game is playing the man.
It's just like I expect Peter Sellers to show up in this Pink Panther
yeah,
song.
Yeah, there is some of that going on there. So what's the pinto of card games then, if that's the Cadillac?
Slapjack.
Is it go fish war? Okay, war.
No, slapjack for me.
Slapjack, yeah. That's a good one.
52 pinto. Pickup.
Any game where you slap the cards is so stupid it should be the pinto. No, it's the gremlin. It's the gremlin of cards.
The gremlin of cards.
Yeah. Here's good Russian stuff from John Malkovich.
It's a position rise. I call it.
I just like the way this guy said this.
$20. Big bets, $20.
It reminded me of that guy from the library on Seinfeld who was
Oh, yeah.
You can kind of hear it. Whoops, sorry.
$20. Big bets, $20.
He just sounds like that guy. Here's a weird noises in prison.
I can't even place when that was.
It was when he was in prison playing those guys for the cigarettes.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah. I love John Turturro. No, wait. When the money is gone, here's 9 seconds of that.
Well, my Uncle Les says when the money's gone, it's time to move on. So enjoy it, you secret handshake, assholes.
Philip Baker Hall, by the way, is who...
The
actor is the...
Oh, wait, for what?
The librarian in Seinfeld.
Oh, right. Yeah, it always sounds like a teenage 80s movie star when you say
his name. It totally does. Oh, Philip Baker Hall in Hard Bodies 4.
Hard Bodies 4.
I forgot about that series.
Is there a Hard Bodies 4?
Oh, there's got to be. It probably goes up to 8 at least.
Movies. Hold on. I'm looking this up. Okay, there's Hard Bodies in 84.
That was a favorite, like on, was it Showtime or HBO used to run those things?
HBO used to show it all the time.
Those TNA movies late on Saturday nights.
I think there may have only ever been one. Oh, no, there are two.
There's
definitely more than one.
Yeah, there's two, it says. I don't see a three or four. Yeah.
Right.
This is one of those VHS covers you'd see in the movie theater or in the rental place.
Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Yes.
Big bikini, totally. White bikini lady was in there. I remember that. Oh, my gosh. Right. This is really throwing me back. Here's
enormous bikini by 2017 standards.
Wait, did I play this yet?
Well, my uncle.
We did that. All right. Here's I love Turturro.
I don't mean to interrupt you, future magistrates and noblemen, but I need to work.
Someone get him like some coffee or like a stimulant.
Future magistrates.
Sleepy John.
Yeah.
I we're gonna turn the microphone way up. It's the most sensitive mic in the world, and you need to talk as though you're talking to a small child that is about to throw a fit.
Mm-hmm.
John Turturro is Ken Kratz.
There you go. If you haven't seen, The Night Of on HBO, he is incredible in that. Cannot say enough
about that last night. I think it's the next thing we're binging.
Oh, it's so good. I loved that little miniseries. Only eight episodes.
And for Turturro specifically?
Yeah, I would say watch it for him. Yeah.
Like, he's right. Just, I mean, the whole thing's good. I think that Aziz, whatever his name is from Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of his name.
Riz Ahmed.
Yeah, he's really good. Everybody's really good. There's up and down, solid stuff, but there, Totoro is this, like, once-in-a-lifetime character. He's amazing in it. So good.
And Riz Ahmed is from Rogue One, right?
Yeah, Rogue One, and he was also in that Nightcrawler thing with
Gyllenhaal. Oh, right.
He was the one that didn't get shot or something. What was the deal? He was supposed
he
to
did
be
get shot by Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal. That's right. Here's what's this? I don't know. Oh, this is Ed Norton yelling something.
What?
No. That's a good what.
What?
I'm going to use that more often. Here's your Italian mob man.
Got a real sweet deal, too. 30 cents on a dollar. There's not a lot of faith in you out there in the business community.
Yeah, my wife needs the monies, Brian.
Grandma. Sounds like him, right?
Okay, yep. Grandma.
Yep, Grandma. I want you guys to hear this and tell me I'm wrong if you think this doesn't sound like an 8-year-old boy, okay? It was around a poker table, and the person dealing, the dealer, sounded like an 8-year-old. Here it is.
I'm sorry, sir. You can't take chips from another player's table.
Tell me that doesn't sound...
Whoa, because that was a woman in Atlantic City.
Yeah. Right. Normal lady in every way, but she sounds like an 8-year-old boy trying to find E.T. or whatever.
Right.
Really wow. Weird.
I'm sorry, sir. You can't take chips from another player's table.
Isn't that weird?
Like straight off of The Sandlot or something.
Yeah, yeah. You're killing me, Smalls, she could say. Here's Gretchen Mol doing some talking. I don't think she's good, so here's why I thought that.
I learned it from you, Mike. I mean, you always told me that this was the rule. Rule number one, throw in your cards the moment you know they can't win.
She was the least powerful performance. And I like her, by the way. I think she's great.
She was great in that Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah. I forgot about that. She was awesome in that.
Steve Buscemi and
She's super interesting. And by the way, one of the Weinstein accusers, and may have been this film. I don't know.
Probably could easily have been. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what someone's pissed off here.
Will you stop f-ing around for 5 minutes for once in your f-ing life?
Whoa, Jesus! What happened? My old man just walked in the door.
Some pretty good f-bombing.
A lot of beeping.
Yeah.
The sweariest Mr. Ripley.
Yep. Is there a sequel to that, the Ripley movie?
There is called, and it's funny because this is in the trivia, it's called Ripley's Game, and Mr. Ripley in that movie, or Tom Ripley, is played by John Malkovich.
Oh, wait a minute. Wow. So, hold it's on.
Older.
Oh, older oh, okay. All right. So it's these books or something this is all based on? Is that why it's...
You know, I don't know. That's interesting. Yeah, it came out in 2002. John Malkovich is Tom Ripley. It's also got Doug Ray Scott, Lena Headey. Let's see. Here we go. Storyline. Tom Ripley, cool, urbane, wealthy, and murderous, lives in a villa in the Veneto with Luisa, his harpsichord-playing girlfriend. Oh, I'm hooked already. You had me at harpsichord.
Yeah. I'm in.
Does anybody who's not a grade school music teacher actually play the harpsichord?
I don't know. It's like being a professional recorder player. You know,
all right. Let's see. Ripley, ever student of human nature, initiates a game to turn a mild and innocent local picture framer into a hitman.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know what to think.
He's
of any
been
of that.
Framed.
I've never.
What is this rate? That's the next thing we should be looking.
Hold on. Framed. I don't want to just so quickly not pay attention to what Dunaway just said. That's amazing. You know, I get there are certain followers of the show who email me every week to tell me what a national treasure Brian Dunaway is. Yeah, they love his little interjections that sometimes we just scan over.
Sometimes flies right by us.
Yeah. Those are my favorite when they get by you.
Yeah, yes. It's pretty good.
6.7 out of 10 on IMDb. Nothing, doesn't look like anything on Rotten Tomatoes.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it either, but sounds good.
Yeah, we'll get around to it at some point in our lives.
I mean, harpsichord playing, come on.
Yeah, what else do you need? Here's one called Smart and Noble.
How come all your moves are so smart and noble and I'm always the idiot piece of shit?
Piece of shit.
Piece of shit.
Piece of shit.
Oh,
piece
we have shit. A new piece of shit
yeah,
clip.
Yeah, brand new piece of shit.
Piece of shit.
Nice. Oh, I'd love it.
So how many pieces of shit is that?
Oh, I have so many shits. Got? I have so many. Hold on. Let's see how many pieces of shit we have. Well, here's an old one.
Piece of shit.
That was Greg or whatever from Terminator 2 that was yelling at it. Which is funny because Edward Norton is in that American History X with the kid from Terminator 2. So it all comes together.
Piece of shit.
Okay, great. You have my money.
So you have my money?
Oh, yeah.
My money? You have my money?
I love it.
So you have my money?
I wrote, he's really weird in this.
And you won't be pushed around.
All right, so there's that.
Hey, wow. when he was doing that. That was I was loving it every minute of it.
This part though, this upcoming bit of dialogue, this had me riveted. I will admit. So here it is.
So that's it then. Just like a young man coming in for a quickie, I feel so unsatisfied.
Just I could listen to him. It's a bad accent. I really believe it's bad, but right. I love it. He owns it.
It's funny, like your clips, you have clips from the beginning with John Malkovich, maybe two clips from the middle with Norton and Gretchen, and then all the rest are going to be clips from Malkovich at the end.
Yeah.
I love it.
This is the best part of the movie. Actually, I only have one more, though.
It is the movie. You're just replaying the movie in a way.
It's like an Oreo, right?
It is like an Oreo.
He's the cookie of the Oreo, and it's just that fluff in the middle that we don't really need.
Yeah, the Gretchen Mall in the middle. All right, here's the final bits from his mouth.
This son of a bitch all night, it chick, chick, chick.
I liked him freaking out. It's pretty good.
I got a request on Twitter that Ibbitt would be saying chick, 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 still.
Chick.
Yeah, thank you. Happened. Well done. Good job
all
on that.
All night with the alligator blood comes back.
Well, on that note. Why it's the Film Sack Checklist, baby face everyone. I swear every actor in this was like 10. Whatever, 98 just doesn't seem that long ago to me, but you look at Malkovich now and you're like, oh, okay, well, never mind. Woo, that was a while ago. Anyway, babyface, everybody, check. 2 hours of boring poo with one intense game with John Malkovich, check. And finally, Jean Grey, check.
Check.
Right? That was the only unbelievable part of the film is I could stay. No, Famke Janssen.
Right.
You can leave.
Yeah. I'll bet Famke Janssen would kick Harvey Weinstein right in his little nutsack. I'll bet she'd just boot him right up at the thing. I'll betcha. Anyway, hey, Star Trek connections. We got some. In this movie, you had Josh Pais. He played Weitz, whoever that was. In DS9, in DS9, played Quark's cousin Gaela in the episode Business as Usual and the Magnificent Ferengi.
I prefer Gaela.
Gaela. He was a Ferengi. Then Famke Janssen, of course. Her real name is pronounced Famke Janssen.
Okay. Janssen.
She played Petra in TNG. She played Kamala in the season one episode, The Perfect Mate. So there's that. Soundtrack great. I gave it a D for I didn't really notice it. Just was sort of there, and it wasn't remarkable. Didn't really think about it. It was just kind of there, and that's fine. It's fine. It's not a problem. You give us that, okay. That's fine. Twitter posts, where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. 280 characters or less.
Thank you. Thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness. Let's start with Randy.
Rounders. Poker for Dummies, the book, the movie, starring Jason Bourne as Scarface in a Rocky remake where Adrian leaves because she's smart and Mickey is an old Israeli judge. I could do this all day, boys, but I'll never watch it again.
Nice. Well done. We're never going to see this again. Are you kidding? Yeah. For the people who don't ever watch the movies but listen to us anyway, I'm not saying he dodged a bullet here or anything, but, you know, it's it's fine. It's fine. What's your name? Brian Dunaway.
Hi, Rounders. Like learning a bunch of poker and racial terms that I will never use, except butt onion. I'm going to use that every day. Butt onion. Twice
butt
a day.
Onion. Butt onion. Wait, butt onion. That's amazing.
That's just weird.
Yeah, that's
weird.
Really weird.
You don't want to be playing with these butt onions. I'm like, what is that? I gotta look it up.
You know, it's a poker term. Means guys who fold when they're only holding like a 10-7.
Oh, yeah, so they're butt onions.
I'm kidding. I have really no idea.
Right.
It's a great name, though. Finally, Brian Ibbitt.
Rounders. Not a diamond in the rough, but it's got heart, Sadly, it's a member of the Every Time I Think I'm Out club, and this hand just doesn't have the nuts.
Nice.
Your best bet is to flush this deuce straight down the pot.
Nice. Flush the deuce. That's a good one.
Straight down the pot.
I missed the straight part and the pot part. Uh-huh. Oh, my gosh.
Ah, see?
Wow.
That's
brilliant.
Really good.
Brilliant.
Yeah, you really anteed up. All right.
Yeah.
we also have this. Just handed to me the alternate titles for this film. First was almost my poker face. That was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, which I'm really sad they didn't go with, was Card Sharknado.
Because it really was.
Yeah, it really kind of was.
I was hoping for Dead Poker Society.
Mm. Oh, that's pretty good.
That's good.
Ah, shit. Brian, I need to talk to you before I write these. That was a good one.
I very rarely come up with anything like that, but I was like, oh, that's one of the first things
Dead
I wrote.
Poker Society. Oh, anyway.
You just reminded me of something. It looks like we're now going to get a new Sharknado movie every year for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, like, before this, like more than 5 years ago, if I'd said to you there's going to be a thing and it's about something and it's going to be serialized and go on forever, you wouldn't have guessed it was about sharks flying through the sky. What would you have thought, though? Mm. Like 5 years ago, what would you have thought was going to be we get a cheap, weird, funny movie in this vein for the rest of our lives?
I have no idea. I can't think of anything. I don't know.
I think I probably would have guessed zombies, but I was feeling like there was so much zombies.
Yeah.
Or vampires. Right, or
right. We never run out of the zombies. It feels like the zombie thing is way more shelf life than the swing back we do with werewolves and vampires and stuff. It feels like zombies are here to stay and that we'll just always have them around. I don't know why that is, but I feel like that's true. And I know my own. I get sick of the vampire thing. I get really sick of the werewolf thing. So I need that just in fits and spurts. But this thing,
sick of the werewolf thing.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a lot of hate.
I hate werewolves. They're my least favorite of the monster types. I can't stand them. But zombies.
Zombies are always good. Is it because of that? Twilight? Does Twilight get you?
No. In fact, I only saw the first one and it didn't. Okay. I mean, I could really care less either way. My problem with it's always bad for me. I don't like them. I don't like anything that depends on the moon being full to turn you into something. There's something just dumb.
It's so regional. I'm more of an international type monster.
Yeah.
Does that splash damage Lady Hawk? Because I need you to like Lady Hawk.
I don't remember. What? Nice. It's in range.
Don't splash the pot.
Splash whenever I want. My club.
Son of a bitch.
I'm amazed that we've only seen Silver Bullet as far as werewolf movies. Haven't seen American Werewolf in London or
The Howling.
The Howling.
Yeah.
I would watch The Howling.
I would watch The Howling for the show, but I really like what's the Kate Beckinsale series of movies? The first one's good. Underworld. The first Underworld's awesome. The rest of them are kind of terrible, but I really like that first one. It's like Matrix meets vampires and stuff. And there's lots of things I like about it, but the least favorite thing in there is the damn werewolves. I just don't care about lichens.
I can't believe I love lichens. I can't believe that we haven't had opportunities to watch Wolf with
Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, with Jack Nicholson. Yeah, yeah.
That came up as a trivia question this week too. It's really funny.
Really, what was the question?
Love it.
Well, how'd it go?
Name the movie where the 90-something movie where Jack Nicholson bites a mailman on the butt or something like that.
Oh, and that was it.
I love that universal monster kind of sort of thing they were kind of doing during the 90s with Wolf and what was the one. Where Mary Shelley's Frankenstein
wasn't that
in the 90s too, late 90s?
Yeah.
So it was kind of like trying to reboot these monsters.
They tried
in a
again.
Different way.
They tried again, and it didn't work this time. This new mummy was terrible.
Oh, the mummy! That was a horrible way to go. They really blew that.
As I said on Current Geek or TMS or somewhere else, and I'll say it again here. The problem is you don't go mummy first. You always go
right.
You go your big, bring out your big guns. Do Dracula, do Frankenstein, do werewolf. I guess would be third, but don't go straight to mummy. Mummy's like Creature of the Black Lagoon. It's like last resort.
And it wasn't even mummy because it was more like almost like I don't know because they were with Dr. Jekyll. They were trying to make this whole Illuminati kind of thing going on, and I just didn't dig it. Yeah. Like Monster Hunter kind of thing. I don't know exactly. Was it League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? Kind of had fun at least.
But also the mummy itself needs to be a monster, not some sort of like supernatural spirit that has unlimited powers, basically.
Yeah. I agree. I like that actress a lot, and I really have enjoyed everything she's been in, but that movie's a bummer. But whatever. They could do it right. Hey, I got an email from Ryan. Ryan wrote in. Says, Ryan. Guys, thank you for putting on such a constantly entertaining show. Well, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. Battlefield Earth remains my favorite episode you've ever done and the funniest episode so far. I'm writing with a suggestion for an upcoming show. After seeing the newest trailer by Netflix for Bright, I'm thinking you guys should sack it on its opening weekend. I know you usually don't do movies that have, do movies that have been out for a while, but since Bright is debuting on Netflix, it should be fair game. Also, while I'm actually kind of looking forward to seeing it, a part of me suspects it's going to be very sack-worthy. It's got Will Smith and a big budget, but there has to be a reason to not open in theaters. Maybe Smith's lines like fairy lives don't matter, and we're not in a prophecy. We're in a stolen Toyota Corolla. Provide some hints. Anyway, thanks for the time that you take to do the show. Hope you all have a wonderful holiday, Ryan. Well, thank you, Ryan.
Have a good holiday.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I had no idea this was a thing.
No, it's totally a thing. Yeah. It's like modern beat cop street stuff, but set in a world that has fairies and fantasy.
Alien Nation with fairy tales, right?
Yeah.
With World of Warcraft races.
Kind of, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And his partner's an orc or something. What's his partner? Yeah, an orc, right?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. It looks like something I would like, but I am worried about why is Netflix doing this and nuts.
Max Landis is doing it. He always does fun things, and I'm going to give this a try. I have high hopes.
Isn't John Landis American Werewolf in London?
He is.
Yeah, this is Max Landis. Yeah,
no, right, I know. Right. So it's just funny that we were just talking about that. Now we got his son doing a thing. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. That sounds all right to me, actually. I wouldn't mind doing that. You know, brand new thing. That'd be a very interesting
thing for us to do. Yeah, something that is brand new on Netflix.
Yeah, so we'll. I think we may consider that. I don't know. When's that happen? That's soon. December.
December. Like, yeah, December comes out.
Okay. Well, we'll put our heads together later in the Slack and figure something out. But great suggestion, Ryan. And thanks for the nice compliments. That's super nice of you as well.
Yeah, talk about some inside baseball. If my mom just heard you say that we're going to put our heads together in the Slack, my mom be like, what are y'all talking about?
Yeah, it wouldn't make any sense.
Is that drugs? Are you guys talking about drugs?
You guys talking about drugs again? You got to stop taking those drugs. Our next film, Proof of Life.
Yes.
We're doing it live on the Coverthon next Friday while Brian Ibbett is doing his 16-hour Coverthon. That means it'll be live. So get details over at coverville.com/live and all that. But we're going to be doing that together Friday instead of a Saturday. It'll be live. We'll, of course, put it on the podcast as well. But the movie is Proof of Life, which I don't know what that is. I have no idea what Proof of Life is.
The movie that broke up Meg Ryan and Russell Crowe. Yeah. Or, I mean, Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid.
Right. She, because of Russell Crowe.
How old is this?
This is 2000. It's 17 years old.
Okay. So we got, here we go. So this is.
I enjoyed this movie back in the day, so we'll see.
David Morse. Oh, you guys didn't tell me David Morse is in this. I'm in already. Yes. I'm done. I know. Good. I love him.
And it's a Taylor Hackford film.
I don't know him.
Oh yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Do I?
Yeah, he made Devil's Advocate. Ray. He made Ray.
Oh, I like Ray. Yeah. Parker.
I like Ray.
I watch Parker. Parker's good. He did An Officer and a Gentleman. Really, this guy's been around.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right then. You've convinced me. He did Phil Collins' Against All Odds video.
Yes, he did. But I need you to, once again, I'm going to keep saying this. Get your hopes down, man. Get your hopes down.
Take a look at me now. Anyway. Sounds good to me. What else? That's it. That's next week. Proof of Life. Come on back and be here for that if you want to watch it live. And if you get it through the podcast, it'll be normal like always. If you want to be like Ryan and send us emails, you can. Filmsack@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @FilmSack. And, of course, FilmSack.com is where all the happiness is. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Chick, chick, chick.
We'll see you next time.
Son of bitch, I was going to do that.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Piece of shit.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.